Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, friends.
Good morning. We are. It's a great day in
already.
St. Louis. It's a great day in America.
It's
Look
a,
at us.
What a great day it is. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji. This is no longer the show. It hasn't been the show for 2 years. Anyway, just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
But we are still with you in the same time slot, basically. With you until 1 o'clock today, as we are every Monday through Friday. 314-436-7900 is our longtime phone number that you can call and text on the Odyssey app where you can listen to the show live. You better have it downloaded on your phone.
You better.
You can record a message and send it to us. It's very easy. There's a button right there. It tells you how to do it. So if we are talking about something and you have a thought and you want to yell at us or praise us, we love praise, you can send us a voice message. We are also streaming live on pretty much every social media platform that matters. We are on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Bad news for all you red dye number three fans out there. The FDA has ruled it's going to ban it. It's out.
I'm so excited. Let's keep going with the dye ban.
Amy hates dyes.
Oh my gosh, I hate dyes. And Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey is suing China over the COVID pandemic, specifically accusing China of hoarding masks and other protective gear.
Good win for the Blues last night. They beat Calgary. However, SLU, in a game you heard right here on KMOX, does fall to VCU. The Missouri Tigers, though, another top five win for them. They won last night. They beat Florida. Good win for them. And the Fighting Illini win as well. So we're going to talk about all of these things coming up here. Nikki Budzinski, representative for the 13th Congressional District in Illinois. We are going to talk to her about Venice, Illinois, where there's this Dow chemical plant. It has been a number of different businesses over the decades, but there is nuclear waste residue that has been there. And a lot of people in the area who live around it have been sick. And so there is an effort to get those people compensation. So we're going to talk to the congresswoman at 10:30. We'll also visit with Matt Pauley. We'll talk all the sports. And then Sean Malone is covering the Rams settlement money ongoing stuff, like trying to figure out where it's going to be spent. And
emphasis on the word ongoing.
Ongoing.
It has been going on
for a long time. So Sean Malone from the KMOX newsroom is covering that story. He's going to join us in the 12 o'clock hour to tell us where we stand. But Amy, if you've been eating Peeps or Ring Pops or Double Bubble or Entenmann's Little Bites or some of the Hostess's Ding Dongs and you've been consuming red dye number three, you're out of luck. They're getting rid of it.
I'm so glad.
It's going to be banned.
Listen, I love America, but there are a few things that Europe is really, really right on. And they are really, really right on banning a lot of the dyes and ultra-processed foods we allow here in our country. this could get into a really serious conversation because it is. Dr. Marty McCary, who we've had on the show multiple times before, has talked a bit about it. Johns Hopkins University, as well as other doctors who have said, we're looking at mysterious or unknown rates of colon cancer in young people. We're looking at skyrocketing obesity. We're looking at issues with Alzheimer's or dementia or other all these illnesses and chronic diseases that are just blowing up here in America at faster rates than they are in other countries.
Yeah.
And he said, and if we don't look at our food source, That's criminally negligent. There's a reason why the EU has certain regulations for the chemicals and dyes and the processes that you can put flour through and so forth. There's a reason why when people go to Italy and eat twice their weight in food, still can lose weight, come back home and have lost weight eating in Italy because they're not eating the processed foods and consuming all the dyes after, you know, being in Switzerland this fall and just seeing the simplicity of the food, even the cereals. First of all, they don't have a giant cereal aisle. They have a lot of muesli, which is just like that dried oatmeal. And if they have a cereal, it's like one Kellogg cereal and it looks completely different than our cereal. It's pretty muted. The colors look faded because they don't have the dyes. They're only allowed to use vegetable dye. I am so glad we are banning red dye number 3. I'm sure I know this is a drop in the water bucket, but it's a start.
Well, it's an indication of exactly what you're talking about. And by the way, January 15th of 2027, that's when food manufacturers, that's the deadline that they've got to get it completely out. So they have a long time to adjust, literally 2 years from now to adjust. And the drug manufacturers, because there are some drugs that have it, which makes, to me, medicine, a pill that you swallow or a liquid that you drink having a color, who cares what color your medicine is? Does it make it more appealing to you if the pill that you're ingesting is red or yellow?
It's crazy in America, but that we do that. We want everything to be commercial and flashy.
Oh, it's got to be cute. Everything has to look aesthetically pleasing for you to eat it. And that goes to the food in the grocery store where they don't display apples that look deformed. Like, who cares if your apple is deformed?
Right?
It's still the same thing. So the drug companies have until 3 years from now. They have until January 18th of 2028. But this always goes back to an idea. And I remember years ago having this argument with a friend about the food that we eat, the food that we're exposed to. And she said, well, it's just personal choice. All you have to do is just eat healthy. Why? I mean, make the decision to eat healthy. And yeah, that's great. You can do that. But when you have a country of 350 million people, it's not possible for everybody to only eat vegetables and whole foods. And I mean whole foods, the grocery store. I mean actual whole foods that are not processed. If everybody's going to eat in this country, it's sometimes going to be stuff that's processed. And there is so much garbage around us that naturally people are going to eat the things that are close to them, the things they have access to. Even if it's not the best food, you're going to eat what you're able to get. And it's just not realistic for everybody in the country, all 350 million of us or so, to eat whole foods all the time.
And also, if you have chicken and some bread and a vegetable, that's healthy. That should be healthy, except we spray insecticides and pesticides on our vegetables. Our flour is ultra processed. So even people who can afford to eat healthy and are eating healthy aren't really eating healthy if they are not incredibly careful, discerning to find out what is in certain foods. And I would say even when you are trying to find out, you can't. It's just different when the FDA or when our country allows so many ultra processed foods.
This red dye in particular, Amy, it's not in things that are, it's not just in stuff that is red.
Right.
You might think, well, this is red, so it must have the red dye in it. Stuff like loaded mashed potatoes from Betty Crocker's has it in it. Like, why would you think that loaded mashed potatoes would have a red dye in it?
Yeah. And all the other things that have to be in a pre-made loaded mashed potato. And I guess another thing that was really made me sad, made me feel like we're failing younger generations, not only with the smartphone access, but also with the junk food that we feed them, the junk food that's available. Going again to Europe and not seeing obesity. It's just not there in the way that it is here in America, especially not among kids. My friend, who is from Switzerland, moved here for 5 years, went back to Switzerland, said raising kids there was so much easier when it came to food choices because the fast food restaurants, the cereal aisle, the chip aisle, the candy aisle, they don't exist in the same way, in the volume or frequency that they are here. He said, it's so hard to be a parent in America.
It really is.
In the sense, I mean, when it comes to eating well.
Yeah.
Right? It's so much easier in other ways. It's more affordable and stuff. I'm not putting that down. I'm just saying when it comes to...
Well, a lot of this food's cheap.
Yes. And when it comes to... And even if it's not cheap, like a Smoothie King is not cheap, it's just that they're on every corner. And he said he had to say no to his kids 100 times a day in the U.S. because you're going to even like, you know, Breadco and getting like a cheesy broccoli soup and a cookie and a pastry. Oh, you're going to Starbucks. Let's get a cake pop and a soda. There is a gas station with tons of candy, fast food restaurants on every corner. The energy it takes for a parent to say no all the time.
Yes.
Pretty exhausting.
It is. And yes, there is some personal responsibility here, of course.
I realize that, but it's
basic psychology.
Yes, it is.
People eat and consume what is close to them, what they have access to. It's just that simple. So you can't expect hundreds of millions of people to behave a certain way and just reject all of this food that we're close to all the time.
The scaled down version is this. I consider myself a pretty self-disciplined person. I like to eat healthy. There are certain foods I don't buy because it's too hard to say no if they're in your apartment and it's too easy to eat the whole bag.
Yeah.
Willpower is a muscle. It's not a character trait, meaning you don't get tired being honest by the end of the day. Honesty is a character trait. You do get tired saying no to the candy and you're feeling hungry and you think you want junk food. That's a muscle that fatigues. And when you're around bad food all the time, you get tired. It's hard.
And when you need some Tylenol PM, you might want to think twice because Tylenol PM also has a red dye 3.
Well, I won't take my Tylenol PM unless it looks pretty.
but as you can imagine, the reason it is being banned is because it has been known to cause thyroid cancer in laboratory animals. And there's been a push for several years now to try and get this, out of our food supply and our drug supply. Well, finally, the FDA has done that. But you're still going to have to deal with it for a couple of years. So if you're one of those people who really wants to pay attention to what you are consuming, you just have to look at the ingredients label and it will say red dye number 3 or red number 3. It's right there.
And I know we're breaking, but also the big bad one is red 40. That one hasn't been addressed yet.
Red 40?
I know.
I can't have red 40 either?
Listen, there are 9 reds.
Oh, man. There's 9 of them?
There's 9.
Then why does it go up to 40?
I think they skipped.
Why?
Probably because...
Are they trying to confuse us?
I think consecutive numbers is too confusing. Kind of like, is it George Washington? Is it George Smoshington? You know what I mean?
Okay. That's Amy Mark's scores. I'm Chris Ranji. You've got our Odyssey app, don't you? Well, you better download it and then leave us a voice message right there from the app. Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Ranji, Amy Mark scores with you. Well, we just saw yesterday that Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey is set to issue his lawsuit against China, Missouri versus China. In less than 2 weeks, Missouri will become the only state in the nation to face off against China for the harm they caused to Americans during COVID-19. This is on Attorney General Bailey's Twitter account. He said more information to come. So it's not a long lawsuit. It's 15 pages. I just read the first part of it. And there are protections for foreign nations against like states suing them. Because my first thought was, can we sue China? Like, how does that work? Like, how does a state sue another country? Well, this is specifically the lawsuit accuses China of hoarding masks and other protective gear during the COVID-19 pandemic. I believe there were other allegations that were turned down, said you don't have the right to do that because of that foreign nations act that protects them. So this is the one that will go through among the many.
So what's the outcome going to be of this? I don't know. To me, it seems performative more than anything else. Like, what is the state of Missouri going to get from China?
I don't
What actual repercussions are there other than, look what I'm doing, I'm filing this lawsuit, and we're going to determine that they've done X, Y, or Z. Okay, great. Now what? What do we get? What does Missouri get from China if they win this lawsuit?
Yeah, and it might, I don't know what Missouri would get. I don't know if it's something that's very material and tangible, or if you said, you know, if it's performative, which may actually, like I said, which doesn't necessarily mean it's not valid. And the reason why I do say that is it is mind-boggling that we did have the COVID-19 pandemic. And I remember in one interview, Dr. Fauci had said that we need to ensure this never happens again. So we're not going to waste time into looking how it started. And that stayed with me for years because I thought, wow, that, does he realize what he just said? That's not how it works. I think the country should be continue to look into how it started. And experts and investigators and reporters from, like, I love Josh Rogan of the Washington Post. He has been on this for years. They have said, yeah, you know, here's our lab leak theory. Then there was the Wuhan wet market theory. With Josh Rogan, he was writing a book before this started, before COVID even started. He was writing and was finishing up a book about the dangers of the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the tests they were doing there, and the fact that it had been sanctioned multiple times by the United States government for not following safety protocol. And it's the highest level security lab that you can have. I think it's a bio lab four. We have a couple of those in the United States, and we actually, a couple of smaller bird flu outbreaks happened because someone didn't follow protocol in Texas and so forth. Not massive, but smaller ones. So these breaches of safety protocol do happen. And to me, it is, you know, like an Occam's razor that if they were testing these diseases, they had already been sanctioned multiple times. The key is, even
but what does
if
this have
was,
to do with Missouri? What does I this think, have to do with the state of Missouri
right.
doing this? This is a federal issue.
Yes, and I think, like, if it goes to being performative, if it's drawing attention, or it is politicians, you know, attorney generals, governors, whoever, who don't have the power to draw the attention to saying, hey, we got to find out what China is doing. If this performance, if you want to call it that, draws attention to it, I'm not terribly mad at it. I'm okay with it.
There's already a lot of attention on it. And this is not really the first time that it seemed to have focused on national issues instead of Missouri issues. So I don't know. Personally, I think that's what he should be. He's the Missouri Attorney General. Deal with the state of Missouri. We have a U.S. Attorney General. If when Donald Trump gets into office, if this is a thing that he believes we should go back and look at, fine, then investigate it. I don't think anybody's going to argue with trying to figure out what the origin of that disease was, that pandemic. I even think the scientific community, the people I trust, the people I listen to, I don't listen to politicians on this. I listen to the scientific community. I think they would like to get to the bottom of it. And there is not agreement on where the whole thing started. But again, this to me is a national issue and not something the state of Missouri should be undertaking.
Yeah, I get it. No, I do. And I know there are bigger things we need to worry about. So maybe he shouldn't be spending his time on this. Again, I will have to see what happens, how it moves forward, what the result is. I think I feel that frustration with what's going on. And the scientific community is hard for me because ultimately it's all people. And there are good people in the scientific community and bad people.
People who spend their entire, their whole day, every day working on these specific things. It's like if I've got a problem with my electrical, I'm not calling you. I'm calling somebody who deals with electrical stuff all day.
I think there are good and bad actors. I always, when money is involved, kind of like with Big Pharma, there's big money on the right and big money on the left because it's Big Pharma. Same thing with the tech bros like Mark Zuckerberg, will big money on the left and right. I with the scientific community, when it comes to research, I think there are some bad actors.
Sure, but a lot of people who are really trying to get answers, so that's why they get into the field. Are those fields to begin with?
I hope we do because COVID royally messed us all up. Not only it took lives, but I think it messed us up forever. And I mean, we're not the same. Our immune systems, all of that.
And I think the reason it messed us up upstairs in our heads is because politicians saw opportunities to get political points.
Oh, sorry. I think I don't, my body's not the same.
Are you talking physically? I'm talking mentally, and as a country, it really jacked us up.
Maybe both.
Hey, when we come back, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Nikki Budzinski is a congressperson from Illinois, District 13, and there are people who have been suffering as a result of some nuclear waste that has been on the Metro East side. We will talk to Nikki Budzinski when we come back on KMOX. It is the Chris and Amy show on KMOX, and it is time to go to the guest line today. And we are visiting with Congresswoman out of the 13th district in the state of Illinois. Nikki Budzinski is with us now on KMOX. Congresswoman, it is great to have you with us this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Chris.
So this is an important issue, and we have spent a lot of time in St. Louis talking about the nuclear waste that's in the, you know, northern western part of the city, you know, the landfill and all of that. But I think it often gets overlooked what was happening on the east side of the river. And for me personally, this does hit home because that Dow Chemical plant is where my dad worked for several years, and he ended up getting sick. So I know that there is a new push that for people in Venice and Granite City and Madison, they could see some relief. What exactly is it that you're looking for?
Yeah, well, we're working actually with Senator Hawley, who I know is focused on exactly the neighborhoods you were talking about in Missouri. On the other side of the river, I'm working with Senator Durbin specifically to get compensation to the communities of Venice, Madison, Granite City that they consider themselves, or they're referred to as, downwind communities. But they are communities that were directly impacted by Dow Chemical dumping radioactive waste materials between the years of 1960 to 1973 that obviously impacted the workers that were working directly with these materials, like your father, but also the communities. What I found out when I just recently visited Venice with the mayor and some citizen activists that have been really leading the charge here, there was an elementary school just blocks away from this Dow Chemical plant. And what has been able to be traced are hundreds of cases of cancer that were developed not just from the workers that were exposed by working within the facility and bringing their exposure to those radioactive materials into their home, but to the community that was surrounding the plant. And so what I'm working on is the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, often referred to as RECA, getting that reauthorized to include the zip code of 62060. Those are the communities that are covered, Venice, Madison, and Granite City, under that zip code that we believe are downwind that were directly impacted by this exposure.
So I know there was some sort of, and it must have been 30 plus years ago, there was some sort of class action lawsuit. And I think it was people who worked at the plant, if I remember correctly, who were compensated for it. But the people who lived in the vicinity of it, they were not compensated, correct?
Correct. And so we're fighting for that in particular. That's why we're trying to fight for the inclusion for the exposure of the downwinder communities, that maybe these are people that didn't work directly in the plant, but they were certainly exposed to the radiation or radioactive material. And so we believe they deserve compensation. I also want to say you're correct that some of the workers were compensated, but that too is, you know, something we're taking a look at because, you know, you had to test positives for some very specific cancers in order to be eligible for that compensation. And obviously we're finding out as years have passed that, you know, those types of cancer should probably really be expanded to make sure we're covering all the workers and all the exposure that they had for working in those plants. But what my bill is, though, Chris, is really focused on including the downwinder communities' exposure.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about that, too, because I know that particular suit covered, you know, all the people who worked there up until a certain date. And I know it was in the 90s, mm-hmm. but I'm not exactly sure what the cutoff was. But there were people who worked in the building after the fact, when Dow was not the company there. It was a place called Spectralite that had been something else. Are those people, if they've developed anything, is that something that will, when you're talking about exploring that in the future, is that mm-hmm. what you mean?
Yeah, that is what I mean. So it was in 1990 when what they the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act first passed. And that was designed to provide restitution to individuals who worked in the radioactive facilities during the Manhattan Project era. And so it has a specific kind of guardrails focus to it. We just want to make sure that all workers that were negatively impacted by this exposure are included in that compensation. So we're working with folks on the ground to take a look at that. That's a part of this. But the legislation that I'm really kind of also trying to focus on that hasn't received as much attention until recently are these downwinder communities and getting the communities also compensated.
Do you know what kind of timeline you're looking at with this bill mm-hmm. and compensation?
Yeah, so we worked, as I said, very closely with Senator Hawley, who was leading the charge in the Senate on this, and Senator Durbin. We had hope that we were going to be able to include this in the National Defense Authorization Act. Unfortunately, Speaker Mike Johnson removed it from that bill. We were really optimistic that we were going to get the 62060 zip code included in that. So what we're going to be doing is just, marching ahead. I'm not giving up this fight. I think we have a lot of different moving vehicles in this next Congress. One obviously coming up is our government funding, which expires on March 14th. There will be a reconciliation bill. I think that's one opportunity for us to get RECA included in that bill. But, you know, also the NDAA will come up again. So there are a number of legislative moving vehicles that we're going to be working closely with our Senate leads and House leads on this. But one of the things I'm encouraged by, Amy, is the fact that this is a bicameral issue. Both House and Senate are taking this up, Democrats and Republicans. And, you know, one of the things we talked about in Venice when I was there just a couple days ago are the issues around exposure to radioactive waste don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you're rich or you're poor, if you're black or you're white, it's going to impact you and your communities. And I think that's what's bringing all of us together to commit to getting this done.
Yeah, you mentioned working with Josh Hawley. It has bipartisan support. Why would Mike Johnson want to remove this from that bill?
Well, what he stated at the time was cost, and there is a price tag to this. But what I would counter that with is, you know, how do you put a price tag on? I met with Larry Bergen, who is one of the citizen activists who's really been leading this charge in the Venice community, who worked in the Dow chemical plant, like Chris's father, and carries with him the burden of bringing home that exposure to his home. He has family that was then indirectly exposed and has seen health effects to that. How do you put a price tag on that? And I think that these communities have long deserved justice on this issue, and we need to continue this fight to get it done.
So do you seem to have confidence that something will happen here. Am I reading that right? That there will be some sort of compensation down the road?
Yeah, we have a commitment, I think, from Democratic and Republican legislators that this is a priority and we're going to keep focused on it to get it accomplished. As I know you both know, Washington, D.C. can sometimes not be the most functional place. But what I would say is, as we stay focused on this as a top priority of mine, a top priority of many other legislators, there are a number of different legislative opportunities for us to tag RECA into their bills. We're going to work to find those opportunities and get it done.
When you are working on a bill like this that does have bipartisan support, you mentioned Washington is dysfunctional. Does it help build relationships across the aisle when you guys can work together?
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say, you know, the district I represent in Congress is so desperately interested in that. Like, they want me to go to Washington to find common ground with Republicans, Democrats, Independents. They don't care about your party affiliation. If you're going to do something that benefits our communities, and this example of RECA and getting this passed will directly benefit the communities I represent in Madison, Venice, and Granite City. And while, you know, Senator Hawley and I will not agree on a number of issues, we can agree here. And so I think that's important, and we should try to work together to get this done.
As I mentioned, you know, my dad worked at this place. I grew up in Granite City, so what happens to that town matters a lot to me. I still have family who live there. Last week on the show, Mayor Mike Parkinson was on talking about the U.S. Steel merger with the Japanese company Nippon. Where do you stand on that right now, and what do you think happens next?
Yeah, I care a lot about Granite City, too, for that same reason, Chris. I've been very focused on how do we bring continued investment into Granite City Works to keep those blast furnaces running. As you know, there were three. Now we're down to two that are really kind of operational. And so what I had been pressing on during all of the talks around upon purchasing U.S. Steel is I wanted to see a commitment of investment in Granite City Works. And that would then lead to me being able to support the deal. We came up shy of being able to see that. And so you saw a lot of opposition, including my own, across the country to the deal because I just didn't see the investment in Granite City Works. We have some of the best workers in the country. They're highly skilled. We're producing unique components and parts, and steel production is happening in Granite City. There is no reason why a company like U.S. Steel or Nippon wouldn't want to see continued investment. And so short of that, I wasn't able to support this deal. But I think what is unknown now is what happens with U.S. Steel. Just yesterday, I saw that U.S. Steel, their stock is up because of the potential for other potential buyers or bidders to purchase the company. We'll see kind of how all that shakes out. And we'll also see how the incoming Trump administration, who also said, like President Biden, incoming President Trump has said he opposed the deal, the merger as well. So we'll see what happens. You know, there are a number of other things. There's a Suncoast potential sale also on the table that I understand is still alive, but until things get more sorted out, bigger picture for Granite City Works, that kind of deal is just in a holding pattern. So I'm following this really closely too. It's very important for the community of Granite City, and I'm going to keep fighting to make sure we see continued investment.
Yeah, Parkinson mentioned that he just hadn't seen in writing that commitment you're talking about. Is it that they don't have the commitment, or they're just not being explicit with what they want to do?
Well, I'll tell you what's been frustrating is there have been a number of really large federal grants that the Biden administration could have made available to kind of make these investments in their plant. One of the arguments that U.S. Steel is making is that they want to move to an electric arc furnace and producing pig iron and reducing their carbon footprint. And that's the argument as to why they want to move their facility down to Big River in Arkansas. I think that those kind of investments to, you know, potentially build an electric arc furnace or make continued investments to decarbonize the plant could have been done through Inflation Reduction Act dollars through the Department of Energy. And we outlined a whole list of those dollars that could have been made available. We would have advocated within the administration that U.S. Steel get those funds to make investment in Granite City. And they just had absolutely no interest. And so there were opportunities. I don't know with this new incoming administration if those opportunities are going to still be on the table or not. But, you know, I agree with you and I agree with Mayor Parkinson. We just never saw the details of what they were or were not able to invest in.
Well, President-elect Trump visited Granite City Steel when he was still president, so hopefully he has a commitment to them. Nikki Budzinski, Congresswoman from Illinois, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a great day.
That is the Congresswoman from the part of Illinois where I am from, Madison, Venice. I grew up in Granite City, and we appreciate her time today. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Okay, This headline is kind of surprising. TikTok plans an immediate U.S. shutdown on Sunday. You know how, don't you feel like a lot of headlines are, you know, they sound sensational or like, oh my gosh, this could happen. And then you read further down the story, but most likely it's not going to happen. I feel like we've talked about TikTok for so long that somehow in my mind, I just thought it's not really going to get shut down. But right now, they do plan an immediate shutdown on Sunday. And because of that, the most downloaded app last week is Xiaohongshu, is what it's known in China. It's Red Note.
Red Note, that's it. Well.
So, but I mean, it will be kind of crazy if this thing just gets, they shut down TikTok. Just, I mean, I'm for it. I just didn't really think it would happen.
I still don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It will become a thing. It'll probably be Kevin O'Leary, the guy from Shark Tank, ultimately buying it because he has said recently that he's pretty happy with the Supreme Court ruling on it because he thinks that it will force that company to do something which will allow him to swoop in.
Right. Basically, what the United States is saying, they have to divest of ByteDance, which is a Chinese-owned company, a.k.a. the Chinese Communist Party runs it.
Well, they have access to it.
Yes, well,
They don't run the app, but they have access to all the data.
And my point was that any business in China is ultimately run by the CCP. That's how Communist Party works. So I'm okay with it. Kevin O'Leary is going to have to hurry. He's only got a couple days. Unless maybe he can buy it once it's shut down.
Probably can do something after the fact, I would think. And speaking of influencers, did you see the influencer who, and this was not what I was going to present to you, but the influencer, young woman who removed force. It cost $17,000. It was a surgery to remove ribs from her body.
To be thinner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she wants somebody to make a crown out of the bones.
That's disgusting.
It's so disgusting.
Where was this?
I don't know. She's an influencer. You can look it up. I'm thinking of it right now as we're talking about TikTok. Did you see that John Hamm, St. Louis's very own John Hamm, has won an award? He is the 2025 Man of the Year by Harvard University's Hasty Pudding Theatricals.
Well, Tom Ackerman brought up this morning that he has won a Stanley Cup and a Hasty Pudding Award now.
Well, he didn't win the Stanley Cup. He was there with his scarf every game.
Why was he always there with a scarf?
Because he looks fashionable. Yeah.
I do think...
I love a scarf.
Oh, listen, the more layers you have, the more fashionable you look. Winter is so much better for looking elegant and wealthy and put together. Because all you got to do is put on a sweater and a coat and a scarf. People might think you're a billionaire.
Doesn't even matter what you're wearing.
Yeah.
If you put on a scarf, you look put together.
You do. Or you look like a real estate agent, depending on the scarf.
A real estate agent?
If it's a silk scarf. A lot of Coldwell Banker real estate agents like silk scarves.
I don't think I've ever noticed that. Like Sandra Burks, is that her name? The doctor that was in the Trump administration?
Yes, exactly. Like
Burks?
She could be. If she's out of a job now, she is ready made for a Coldwell Banker glamour shot.
The fires in Los Angeles, in California, are ongoing, and there is some confusion about what happens with insurance. Not just there in California, but around the country, how it could affect you as well. Director of Strategic Communication with the Insurance Information Institute, Janet Ruiz, will fill us in when we come back on KMOX.